can have all the money in your hands, all the possessions anyone can ever have. But it's all worth the treasure. True worth is only measured not by what you got, but what you got in your heart. You can have, you can have everything. But what is it? What is it?
Never had it so good. 101.1 Radio, the best R&B and hip hop music. The Quiet Storm every Friday and Saturday. Talk radio with the best host in the business. Sports talk radio every weekend night with Princess Cooper. Never had it so good. Radio now on 101.1, and it's 24/7. The world's best radio station.
In this day and time, stereotypes are the false descriptions for all of humanity. James T. Deshaies is the author of two great poetry books that attempt to describe life from a male perspective. It has been a common belief that men are unable to put into words their deepest feelings and spend most of their time focused on the surface of what life means. Thoughts, love, and reflections, and passion, desire, and contemplation take you on a journey that has very few travelers. Mr. Deshaies has opened his heart and spirit up in ways that few have ever experienced. The depth of his poetry will have you reading his books and poems over and over again. you will find yourself using his passages to describe your own feelings to your family and friends. It is now time to put aside your thoughts and feelings related to the depth of men's thoughts and delve deeply into the words of James T. Deshaies. Once again, he will put an end to your thoughts that men can't translate their heartfelt spirit into words. Both of these books will allow you to find comfort in the reality of the heart of men. You will spend hours trying to embrace the way men want to love and display their passion to the women they love. Don't be fooled by those books that create love through words of lust, vulgarity, and unhealthy displays of sexual activities. You will discover the types of words that will allow you to rejoice in the future of what love truly means to men. Your book clubs and families will be able to discuss these words without fear. No one will have to leave the room. Both of these books can be purchased at jamestdeshaies2.com and lulu.com. Feel free to reach out to the author at tlreflectionsjtd@gmail.com.
This is James T. Deshaies, the host of Thoughts, Love, and Reflection, brought to you by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network. We're here so that your voice can be heard loud and clear. The show is on Monday through Friday at 6 p.m., Saturday at 8 p.m., Sunday at 8:30 p.m. Call in at 657-383-0309. Guys, it is never a moment when I can honestly say all the time that I've been on the air that we've gone through periods of time where it is so important for us to be engaged. And there are times when I come on this show and I am just livid about the new things that I'm dealing with and trying to understand government and how it works and how it seems that such a large percentage of the American people can be hoodwinked. Here we are, some of the smartest people in the world, and yet such a large majority of us can turn on ourselves without being able to force the government to do our bidding. So today I'm asking, does the government truly serve us? You know, there's aspect of our government that seems to have a key to keep them from galvanizing themselves in a way that always keeps them from doing what it is that we want them to do. You know, we have a system in place where a president can't serve but 8 years, no matter how good he is and how influential he is. He can only serve for 8 years. But then when you look at the House and the Senate, who are able to influence our government and control our government indefinitely, you wonder if the president is just no more than a puppet, and that we're being constantly ruled and governed by the House and the Senate in a way that they don't do what is in the best interest of the individuals. I've said on this show before, where are all those people who were so in an outrage with Sanders and who are now allowing our government to give control back to the corporations and the rich? When they can come and tell us, oh, we got a tax break for you, we're going to be able to give you an extra $2,500, and this is really going to make a difference in your life. We're going to take away Obamacare, which was so important to you, so important that you have something that would make sure that your health was taken care of the utmost. that you, even if you had a condition, a pre-existing condition, the insurance company could not deny you care. And these are the things that were supposed to be so important, but within a 12-month period of time, our government has decided that millions of people no longer need health care, and we're going to appease these people with giving them $2,500 in tax relief while telling them at the same time that corporations are going to go from 30% to 21%, and those that 21% for corporations will be a permanent tax break, and the tax break for the middle class will not be permanent. And so you'll get this little 25% break for a year. Now, I don't know anybody, even extremely poor people, who would suggest to you that if you spread $2,500 over the whole year and you give them $200, a little more than $200 a month, that that's going to make a difference in their life. You take away health care. Let me give you an idea, and I want you to fully understand this, because this is on a personal basis related to health care. Years ago, I retired and was told that my health insurance was going to cost me as much as $700 or $750 a month, which became my highest bill next to my mortgage. But through Obamacare, I was able to reduce that from $750 down to $450. Now, after reducing that over the time that the Republicans have gotten back into their way, that price has gone from $450 all the way up to over $1,000. Now, you giving me $2,500 when I have to spend $12,000 in health care, you have allowed me to recognize that health care cannot be my most honored thing in my life. So something that the majority of people care about, their health care, that we can't afford to care about our health care. So, and if you're not working, you got millions and millions of people who can't retire, because if they retire, they can't afford health care. And it is amazing that we've been able to hoodwink America, and this man has put in a tax bill that benefits him more than anybody else in America. And we sit back and allow every Republican to vote on this, and it's going to be interesting to see if they pay a penalty for doing what was in their best interest instead of the best interest of the people. I am truly amazed and bewildered by what seemingly is the overthrow of common sense, how people can vote against their own interest. D, I'm going to come to you first. This is amazing to me that we as a nation can be made to work beyond our retirement years only because we're afraid of losing health care. But the government can do what seemingly is in the best interest of those who could care less about paying $1,000 a month as they get older, because they have more money than anyone else, and that becomes an insignificant part of their budget. How can we be taking advantage of like this? Are you there, D?
Yes, James. I'm sorry. Yes, I am. Look, You know, you raise a very interesting point when you speak about the life term of the presidency compared to that of Congress and things of that sort. You know, I asked a question a few months ago. How could these congressmen and these senators buy all in to somebody the likes of Donald Trump? And Ms. Audrey helped me to understand that these senators and congressmen being lifelong politicians, this is their high point, especially if the president is of their party. This is what they live for. And so that helped me understand why they just went all in on the stupidity, regardless of how asinine it was their hope that it would kind of pan out for the better. But let me stretch this out a little bit to make some clarification of where we are in time and in history, and in the likelihood that history just might repeat itself. You know, the United States government patterned itself and models itself after the Roman Empire. They had governors, they had senators, they had Congress. The only thing they didn't have that we have is a democracy. They had a dictatorship. But in that, it kind of shows how the Senate runs everything. And you're absolutely right. And I never really kind of were able to put my hand on it. The presidency is nothing but a head figure, a figurehead, a puppeteer. Because the Congress are the one that do all the deal making. And you do me a favor this month, I'll do you a favor next month. Then I come to you, well, how about that favor that you owe me? Or that thing that you owe me? They do that. And so all of that has to be fixed. Now, and looking at it historically, it was that type of behavior, the greed of the Congress and the greed of the Senate in the Roman Empire that saw its fate and its demise. If we are modeling ourselves behind that protocol or that likelihood, then the same is probably due to happen. Not trying to be pessimistic, but they seem to be out of control in that same kind of way. And I find that very very interesting. Thank you.
Cheryl, it is just amazing to me that we could have went through 8 years with Barack Obama and appreciating the things that did take place and the changes that were made related to healthcare, and then to have them snatched away from us in such a way that the expense was going to knock millions and millions of Americans off the insurance roll, and allow that money that paid for poor people to get on Medicaid to now be given back to the rich, to the point by Republicans that it will raise our debt, when they're supposed to be the ones who care so much about decreasing the debt, but yet they're going to find ways of putting that money back in their pocket. And we all are aware that rich people are some of the most stingy people in the world. You know, they show up and show a few rich individuals like Bill Gates and a few others, but we know that the majority of them are more interested in keeping money in their pockets than sharing it with their workers or the rest of the country. So why would we allow them to benefit so greatly, but yet put the burden on the people who can least afford it?
Good evening, and how is everyone doing this evening? I'm like you. I was just in total shock you know, of all of the numbers, because that's what I was really trying to understand, you know, the numbers. And I'm just wondering if everybody just clearly understood the numbers. And one thing that we do have to realize is that those with money are money driven. And we say that, you know, what are they doing for the middle class or for the poor? That is not what they're thinking. They're thinking of self, because that's how a lot of them, and not all, a lot of them got to where they are today by money driven. If it does not benefit the bottom line for self, then it's no good. They didn't get into, you know, and I still say a lot, not all, you know, into that bracket without being shrewd, without being hungry, without being greedy. So although it was a shock, it still wasn't a shock. And how, what is that for us? Nothing. I mean, clearly nothing. And as you laid it out, you know, how it would be distributed and how it would benefit in their eyes, but not in our eyes. So here is the thing. As we approach this, what are we going to do as individuals? Because once it is passed by the Senate, now, I'm not sure did it go any further, but once that happens, is that now we as individuals have to put our business in place, meaning we have to start thinking like the 3% think. And when I say that, we don't have to be shrewd about it. We don't have to be where we are not given, you know, change our personality, but we got to get into the mind of the 3% and how they are thinking. Because although it's going to affect, and it will affect the majority of people, of individuals, what are we going to do as individuals? How are we going to, you know, say for instance, with, you know, the health plan? My thing is with me is I'm living a healthier life so that I won't have to depend on going to the doctor or relying on the medication that is needed. But how in every aspect of our life are we going to change? Because we're going to have to change those things in our life. You know, we have to accept what is, and then we have to do just what we sit here all the time on this show and do, put a plan of action together for the individuals. And as the audience hears, then they can jump aboard and then share that within our household and within our community. So, I mean, what has happened, we can't continue to cry over it. Now we got to do something about it.
And Reverend Smith, my issue is that I am not a rocket scientist. I am a college-educated individual. But truly, there are people who have gone and got a lot more education than I have, and some with less education than I have, who ought to be able to see what is clearly right in front of your face. When somebody takes away something from you that can make you hundreds or save you hundreds of dollars a month, and return gives you a couple of thousand, and say that this is going to be the biggest tax break we've ever had, and you're going to get less than $3,000, but the rich are going to go from 30% down to 21% of what it is that they earn, possibly keeping them hundreds of thousands. Where can you, how can you possibly believe that your president is doing you a favor?
Good afternoon to each and every one of you. God bless you, and thank you for the topic that we have tonight. And I thank Cheryl and I thank Dee. But let me tell you something, the way I see it anyway. Cheryl was on point, and Dee was on point, really. You know, when you stop and think about it, have you worked and got to be a millionaire? None of us have worked on a particular job. Even sometime if you have a business, it is very hard to become a millionaire. It is very hard unless you come up with some scheme or something to better your condition, something that someone wants to purchase or whatever. There's always something in the background that you're doing that's not above par, that's causing you to make the type of money that you wind up with. Now, getting down to the point of where we are today, we're dealing with a bunch of people that probably never had a decent job that paid them in their lives. When you're talking about, some of them say, oh, I came up. No, you came up through your daddy and your mother, who actually passed their wealth on to you. They may have worked and skilled and schemed to get what you want. So the government doesn't have the slightest idea, especially the GOP, doesn't have the slightest idea what it feels like to need to go to the hospital and not have enough money, to be going to the hospital and they say, we can't do nothing for you here. We're going to transfer you over to Bellevue in New York or somewhere, a teaching hospital. That's sad when we won't even take care of our own people. But Cheryl was in there right in the hole again when she the love of money, it's all about that dollar bill. Now you look at what is going to happen. $1.4 trillion is going on top of the debt that we already have. And this guy Corker, he's worse than any of the others that I see up there that's playing these games. He talked all this trash, and the minute they gave him a real estate break, that his company this year would be able to save $11 million, now he's going to vote for, that's why he's voting for this. They went in the back room, like you said, on your intro. They went in the back room and they talked to Corker. Okay, we'll put that in. You got to vote with us now, and you got to hang with us. You got to stay. That's the way it works. And they have not the slightest idea what you and I are going through. I'm blessed, and I pray to God that so many of you out there listening are blessed. I can go to the VA. I don't have to pay a dime, even though I got Medicare. And I got my own Blue Cross and Blue Shield. So I've got it three ways. That would come from my jobs, though. But the thing of it is, suppose I didn't have all the things that has happened to me with cancer and sugar and high blood and all those things, I would be out of a whole lot of money. And a lot of people are going to be out of a lot of money. They are so silly. No, plain out stupid. Not to be able to see that they are being hoodwinked, like you said, by this $2,500 for the middle class. The poor are going to get just a little bit more, but when you spread this out all over the entire year, you can't even hardly buy 2 weeks' worth of bubble gum with that money. You better not drive 200 or 300 miles. Because you're in trouble. So they are not looking, oh, we're going to have a windfall. Get the heck out of here. The only people that are getting a windfall out of this thing is the rich folk. Trump said he would never do this and never do that, wouldn't do the other. He said that he was going to be hurt by it. He's a liar, and he know it. He's going to be $11 million richer at the end of this year because all of those guys up there, they had a chart on today about the individuals. Numerous of those guys are going to have windfalls just with the real estate that tax that they are cutting out. Okay? So they know what they are doing. They know what these back rooms are made for. And we need to, not Cheryl, it's kind of hard for an individual to do something, but we need to stand up together. The Constitution said we the people. Somebody got to open up their mouth. We don't have Martin anymore. I said that before. But there are still people out here that are quite capable of standing up and saying what they mean, even though we know that what is actually driving this whole thing is hatred. They think that they are going to hurt us, and they are not, because we are used to what they're doing. Who they are going to hurt is their base, the people that voted for them, and you're going to see a backlash like you've never seen before. In 2019, after all of this washes down, you know what you put up on the hill and you pour water, it's going to wash down over that hill. And sooner or later, it's going to reach bottom. And that's what's going to happen with all this foolishness that's going on up there right now. Amen. And go ahead.
D, it is just incredible that we're reliving that Reagan fiasco, which was called the trickle-down theory. Somehow or another, we're right back at, if we give money to the rich and to the corporations, they're going to make sure that that money goes back, trickles down to the middle class. And we find ourselves in this horrific situation where things are actually being taken away from us in order to benefit the rich at the sacrifice of health care for the general public. How can the masses stand to be taking advantage of this when they've been told up front where the money's coming from?
Well, James, I want to piggyback on what Pastor Smith just said, to understand the scenario, we have to use the catastrophic model of the end result. That being, the machine is the money structure, the people with the money, with the power, and with the scheme. Pastor Smith spoke about the scheme. The scheme, it was well designed. The scheme was well designed, but the scheme could not come to any fullness without the voters. Now, how did you get the voters to act in your behalf? You play on their emotions. And that's the driving force. You play behind the presidency of Barack Obama and the proposed Affordable Health Care Act, which involved the government when it came down to forcing people to partake in this deal. Now, when it comes down to white America and the supposed imaginary militia, the militia stands ready for a government takeover. That's all they stand for. That's why they storehouse all these guns all the time. Always waiting and looking for the government takeover. And the white establishment know that because they Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, countless others, they stole that fire. They prepared them for the government takeover. So when the money structure, Trump and Bannon and whoever else is involved, they got this massive scheme, but the scheme won't come to fruition until the voters put it into place. And so they antagonize the voters with racial hate and distrust and dislike. And sure enough, it worked. Now, when Pastor Smith says the water going to run over the hill, that's right, it is. But by that time, the people that put the scheme together, they'll be well-to-do. And they are looking to come out on the other side all right and fat-catted while everything else around them will be smoking and burning in ruins. They don't care. As long as they got their pockets fat, they can start all over again some kind of way. And so that's the scenario. And the voters are shallow-minded. We got to call it for what it is. They can only see as far as the hand in their face. And those voters are the ones that put them in. And so, and they are going to suffer right along with us. Because, you know, we don't know nothing, no way. Let them tell it. And so they won't never listen to us, but sure enough, they are the cause of this whole thing. Thank you. Is anybody there?
I'm here.
Okay.
I think James might have just went out.
All right. I'm back. And when you say to people that their 401k is going to be going up, but their 401k is not going to be going up at the same speed as the cost of health care, you're eliminating the benefit that they would get from having their retirement go up high. And so what you have is when you have the rich going up from, again, dropping from 30-some percent down to 21%, 10%, they'll be able to accumulate a lot more money from their 401k and the money they have invested than the cost of their health care. But that's not going to take place with the middle class when their health care is going from 400 over to over 1,000. They won't be getting $1,000 a month of benefit from their 401k.
Are you there, Cheryl?
Yes. I'm here. You didn't say. The reduction of what the benefits that we receive will not outweigh what we might receive in the economy growing, especially in an era where we might not have a lot of money in a 401k.
You know, I keep looking at, you know, the numbers that are presented, and what I'm gathering is that, you know, even when we go to vote, we have to understand and clearly understand what we are voting for. We can't listen to what's on TV because they are actually, I mean, they're lying to us. So that means if we truly don't understand, we need to ask somebody to break it down to us. Because once we understand what we have voted for, then we might have not voted that way in the first place. So sometimes we go off of, well, I heard this one say this good, and this one is saying this good. But what does it really mean? That's all part of politics. And politics is usually nothing but lying to the people. But when it actually comes down to breaking it down, that we can understand. And, you know, that, just a light bulb went off in my head, is that, you know, even in a community, having a class before the election of anybody who really want to understand what it is that they're voting for and who they are voting for. And the reason why that light bulb went off is my mama had a ministry and would have access to a building. And that means that somebody would come in and really break it down so that when we go to the polls, we are really understanding, you know, and not simply going off of what's being said to us during the commercials. So, you know, that was a good idea I just had. I'm just saying.
That's true.
I just thought about that, you know. I just thought about that. You know, we got to understand what we are voting for. And that can help us a lot.
And you know something, Cheryl, let me say something, Cheryl, while you go. What you were saying, and that's where we in the churches could help. Now, you go ahead.
You're right. You're right. You know, because I was saying today that although my mama have her own ministry, they have a church, and that church has a building in the back that's useless. It's not teaching anybody anything. You know, and if things are more taught, because a lot of people within the community that are voting, you know, some of them are not even graduates. Some of them are only going by what they hear or what their neighbor tell them. So we got to be more educated on what we are voting. And you're so right. You're so right. So you know what? I'm going to pass this on to my mama because they got a building. They got a huge, huge part in their church that's never used for anything. And, I mean, it should be used for the community. And teaching the community whatever it is that we need to learn. Because you see, a lot of those who's just coming out of school and voting, they don't know as much as those that have been voting and not as well educated. So if we can be educated more on what we are voting for, then it can really sway our numbers.
Amen.
And let me just say this to you, Reverend Smith. Bernie Sanders supposedly did something that was so far out of the norm. He was supposed to be insignificant related to the run for president. But yet, he was able to galvanize a huge amount of people behind his philosophy. He wanted to raise the minimum wage to $15.
All right.
He wanted to make college free and a host of other things I can't remember, but I know those were two of the most important things. Now, where are all those people related to now? The Congress hadn't talked 1 minute about raising the minimum wage, has not talked 1 minute about increasing or decreasing college tuition. Now, where is the outrage? Can you imagine that the amount of money would have been increased by raising the minimum wage to $15?
Yes, indeed.
It still would be a lot higher than $2,500 for the year.
That's right.
So how can you support that, but then turn around and allow the Republicans to go in the reverse?
Well, here's exactly what I believe is going on. We as individuals, we've gotten to the point that once something is done, we're through with it. We feel like we've done our part, okay? And that was during the election. He galvanized millions and millions and millions of younger folk. He really did. He had them in the palm of his hand, and they were ready and willing to do whatever it was necessary. But after it was all said and done and he lost, everybody went into their own neutral corners, and nobody never came back out to fight. All right? That's one analogy I can say, put it in, too. Nobody ever came back out to fight. And that's why I don't get involved with masses of individuals, because masses of individuals are not going to continue I might want to go next day and the next day and the next day and the next day. And they're gonna always find this. I'm tired now. I want to go home. I want to do this. We've got, if you're going to do anything worthy, you've got to do it at a continuum type of a situation. You can't do it hit and miss on any of this foolishness that's going on now. Bernie Sanders had this thing down pat. Down pat. He really did. And the young people was, I mean, all over him. All over him. But what happened? They went home, went to their neutral corners, and now you don't hardly ever see. Every now and then, I see one lady on the MSNBC who I can't remember her name. She's a black lady, but she comes on and she talks every now and then when they call her on, I guess. But there are so many others out there who were out there really going into this thing with Bernie Sanders. We've got to come to a point where we, the million, all those ladies that march, where are they? Where are they? Look at the ladies that even accused Trump, Donald Trump, of sexual misconduct. What happened? All of a sudden they disappeared, and then they reappeared when all of the Me Too came out, hashtag. Why didn't they continue on? Yes, there's a lawsuit. I know that. But all of these ladies need to put themselves in one pile and go after what they, if they really believe in what they're doing. If you believe in what you're doing, don't let nobody back you up. Don't let nobody back you up. And that's why I was saying to Shell, we need, as in the churches, we take time to ask people to give money. Why can't we take time to instruct people on what they ought to be going to vote for? And even if we don't do it during church, we always have an extra curriculum during other parts of the week. Why can't we help them to learn what they're actually going for? Even though we know most of them not going to show up, because there's one thing about people in general is that we want to be where the masses are, but if we don't feel like it's a necessity, we're not going to show up. We're not going to show up. So I look at what we are doing now and what's happening to us now as a godsend. I'm praying to God that this will wake us all up. Because we are going to catch holy hell these next 4 years or 3 years. He's not going anywhere. We can stop thinking about that. He's not going anywhere because by the time they take it to, even if they try to impeach him and they take it through the process and the system and all of that, his four-year term will be up. He knows that. They know that. So that's why the Democrats are not. Some of them are screaming for impeachment, but that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. So what we need to do is galvanize ourselves so we can stand firm together. And when we say, like the lady said, no, I don't want to go to bed with you, we need to say, no, we don't want to go to bed with you, Trump. Okay? And that's what the people have forgotten, how to say no. We have forgotten how to say no. Praise God.
All right, I see we have another caller on this new to the line, 2251. 2251, give us your name and where you're calling from. And what are your thoughts about this tax bill being passed where it seems like the most of the money is going to the rich?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
Yes, I think that I'm agreeing with all of you, but I have to just say my own opinion. What the lady said was right on. You know, I'm agreeing with her. I think that we as a people should basically unionize with each other, but also have a common goal in mind that we have to take, excuse my French, the black dollar out of white America. I don't mean to be racist or nothing like that. I'm just saying we have to learn how to go against corporate America Because right now corporate America is telling us if we don't do this and we don't do that, we see the outcomes and effect that it's going to have on us. As far as the money-wise, like you said, even if we do try to impeach him, his 4 years will be up. So I think that right now we as a people should basically not try to find another president, but stay in harmony and balance with one another, because that's what it's about. You know, you can't be out here, you see all these wars going on out here, and you see everybody's going to war. You can't be out here having solutions for everybody that's going to war, but don't have the solution for solving the war that's inside yourself. You follow me? So a lot of people are, I'm not going to say at war, but a lot of people are supporting this guy. And that shows you where their mindset is at. Like the pastors, you got certain pastors that support this guy, and you got certain people in Congress that support this guy. But yet this guy that's they're supporting, I just want you to know, and excuse my French for saying this, he's showing you that Muslims are not the only terrorists. You follow me?
And you're right.
Muslims
you're
are
right.
Not the only terrorists.
And he supports the white supremacists, yet he wants to call himself a Christian.
Right. And that shows you two things. You got a person that's in everything, but that's grounded in nothing. And then you got a person who tells you one thing, but does the other. Now, is that beneficial to us as a state, as a people? You know, that's not beneficial at all, because when you look at it, you can ask him, well, are we going to war? He could just say, no, we're not going to war. Next thing you know, we at war. So I just want to say that, this guy right here is he's out to trump us. His name not Trump for any reason. He's out to trump us. But I think far as getting back to the money and us being a unified people, I think we need to start saying a crime against us anywhere is a crime against us everywhere. You know what I mean?
All right.
I think
we're going to take a short break. We're going to take a short break and we're going to come back and continue our conversation.
I will be the one to hold you. I will be the one.
This is James T.D. Shea, the host of Thoughts, Love, and Reflections. Brought to you by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network. We're here 7 days a week, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, Sunday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Call us at 657-383-0309. We're here so that your voice can be heard loud and clear without interruption. Pastor Smith, I want to ask you, you know, it just seems so bizarre to me that people who are uneducated and economically deprived seem to have their focus in the wrong place. And seems instead of putting, galvanizing themselves and forcing the government to give them something they don't have, they would rather force their intent or their focus on trying to obtain a dream through playing the lottery and scratch-offs and all of that. You know, I have on occasions bought lottery tickets because the amount was so high, but I could never keep it up because that just was not my focus. But we have our poor literally being taken advantage of by the government by encouraging them to buy lottery tickets each and every week in hopes of a dream, but will not pull themselves together in a manner that they could demand that same money that they would get from the government, they could get through their votes if they were willing to stay focused as a focus on their rights as people versus their ability to scratch those scratch-offs and buy those lottery tickets.
James, we must remember we're in the microwave age. Everything they want quick. We can use one of 45's word, quickly, okay? So everybody want everything to be done overnight or right then the next moment. Nothing is going to change automatically at any particular time or any time, at like a snap. Only God can change something in a moment, in a twinkling of an eye. So that's what we're dealing with. And then when you look, if we look at our race of people, the black people, our attention span has been, I don't know, we have an attention span about like a gnat. We don't keep things on our mind very long, and I'm not putting down my people, don't get me wrong. But I've been around my people for 75 years, so I know what it's like. We don't think in long term, we think in short term. That's why the white man was able to buy up all of our properties and stuff that we even had that was valuable, because what we saw was the dollar bill, and that's all. Then that same dollar bill 10 years later turned out to be $10 million bills, okay? So we are quick to take that dollar bill of what we're asked because we see a short-term economical gain, but it's not actually a gain at all. But we have to realize that people are still in a transitional stage. I hate to say that, but we are still in a transitional stage. We became totally complacent when Obama was in the seat. We became totally complacent. Shouldn't have came. I don't know why, but we did. But now that he's out, everybody see, oh, my God, we should have backed him more. We should have done this. We should have done that. But now it's too late. God saw that we were falling away from what we ought to be doing. God looked at us and said, you know, you have left your first love. Your first love was Jesus. We had the church and thing down to a science. We really loved the Lord in our times of hardness and having to dig and scratch and help each other. I remember when I first built my home, I didn't even have to worry about it. Everybody in my community came by that could lay blocks, that could finish concrete, that could do it. It was all free. We helped each other. We helped each other. You can't get nobody to even give you a blade of grass anymore. We've become complacent, and now it's gone so far until we have lost the desire. We've gotten to the point, if you notice our younger people, some of them, we just don't care. We don't care. Nothing's going to change. And this, they know that. But what's going to happen and what is happening, and you'll see it happen, watch my word, you'll see it happen. The white man who thinks he's gotten away, he's going to break himself down worse than we did, like the Great Depression when they was committing suicide in record numbers. Because when this bubble burst that we're on right now, and they think that they got somebody, when this tax cut starts rolling through and nothing starts changing, everything starts getting worse, you will see we are going to be fine because we are actually individuals who are used to this. We should never get used to it, but we are. And it's going to make a big difference. So I don't know. People are just fickle. People are fickle, James. People are fickle.
I want all of you to answer this question because it's so bizarre to me. I have to be truly honest with you. I thought we had turned the corner when we elected Barack Obama to two terms, and I was a Hillary Clinton fan. And so when people say, oh, well, black people just vote for black people, I was not going to waste my vote on Barack Obama. I have only wasted my vote one time that I can remember, and that was when I voted for Jesse Jackson, and I knew he wasn't going to win, but I was going to support him anyway. And so, you know, he ran a lot after that, but he never got my vote again. And so my issue with this is my people rose up when I was a child and did not completely understand what was going on and the power that was being galvanized and the power that was being forced on America in the late 50s and the 60s. That power that was put together and just was used to move us light years ahead, somehow was being gotten decreased in the 70s, in the 80s, and in the 90s. It reemerged during Barack Obama, but it's been taken away again. And so my question would be, why in the world were we able to put this force together in the 50s and the 60s and really to our benefit, but not be able to keep it going? I mean, why have we released that power that was used so effectively during that period of time, Cheryl?
You know, that's a good question. Not even just I don't know. I think I may have to think on that a little bit. You can
all
come
right,
back
let me go. Let you think about that, and let me go to D. D, what is your thoughts about it? How were we so effective with using our leadership in the 50s and the 60s and to force white America to release so many of those restraints that kept us oppressed? But we were not able to keep it going. Why haven't we been able to with Barack Obama? But why we haven't been able to keep that going?
Well, we fell into the realm. We fell into the hole of complacency.
Amen.
Once Dr. King and his movement did what it was supposed to do, we thought we had arrived at the promised land, so there was no need to fight no more. But in that complacency, another generation came up, another fad, if you will, came up and took control. That fad is the hip hop era, and so in all of that, we lost our energy of what it was that we supposed to be doing as a culture. So Now this is where we are. Being as though that this is where we are now, my question is, going forward, how are we supposed to hope that our vote has the power that it's supposed to have when you have this electoral college to contend with and have to deal with the end result of all of that? Because who along with y'all believe me that the electoral college had its own special interest involved in this past election? I'd like to know your thoughts on that, if you have time to place that, James. Thank you.
Okay. Reverend Smith, what are your thoughts? Because I'm sitting here thinking about, I am in a much better place financially than both my mother and father, even though the economics were different. They probably had more economic strength back in their day. I may have more money, but they had more economic strength. But we are not even using our economic strength. Has not empowered us. We're not willing to become that force that was in place in the 60s and late 50s. And so we are aware of the force, but we don't want to connect to it. Why is that, Reverend Smith?
James, I believe that it's because we I don't know, it's unfortunate, but we think we have arrived. A lot of blacks who have very, very, very good jobs now that are tokens and don't even realize that in a lot of the places that they work at, they're tokens. But a lot of them, we have moved away from our neighborhoods. We don't go back and try to help anybody else. It's all about me, me, me. Years ago, it was about us, everybody. I know when we planted a garden, James, and we grew collard greens or we grew okra, we grew whatever, we would share all of that. Everybody did that in the neighborhood. That's why we were galvanized. We were together. We stood together. When one hurt, the other hurt. We don't do that anymore. We have become, and I don't care what nobody say, and I may be wrong, God forgive me if I'm wrong, but integration was the worst thing that ever happened to us. I'm sorry, but it was the worst thing that ever happened to us. Why? Because we had control of our own destiny and our children. Ever since integration came in, we've lost control of our destiny and our children. We are no longer the driving force in our children's life. All we can do now is sit back and watch them put most of our children in jail. When I used to fight against that when I was in law enforcement, how can you arrest this one and didn't arrest the other one? I used to get in a lot of trouble, but I didn't care. But the thing of it is that we are not what we used to be. We're a long ways from what we used to be. I can't afford to do that and think about getting into heaven. I don't hate anybody, but I know that integration was not good for us. We were asking what King was asking for, what he was really asking for, give us the same rights that you got, okay? I don't want to live with you. I don't want to do this. But no, they said what we're going to do, we're going to bring you and incorporate you so we can control you. We will bring you in with us so we can keep a good eye on you. And all of a sudden, our black teachers, they weren't smart enough. A lot of them were let go. What happened to the male? We had a lot of male teachers. The role models were gone. So now what do we have now? What do we have now? We got a lot of people looking, and they don't see anything. Nobody gives a hill of bean about our children. I'm getting ready to open up a whole corporation of situations where it's going to be like the one that's in Los Angeles called Homeboys Industry. I want to help. And see, it's going to take more people to stand out and say, I got to help. I got to help. And that will bring, let our children and even some of the older adults Let them know that we got some people in our communities who really want to help. And so we, in order for them to help us, we got to help ourselves. So we need to start looking at that part of it. We're messed up because we've been totally put against ourselves. And here we are now fighting. Fighting for what? Like I said the last time I was on here, why in the name of heaven's heck are we still fighting to vote? The Voters' Rights Act should not even be in there. Why are we still fighting? In the 50s and 60s, we fought. That's what King was fighting for. We were fighting for those things. Now that we got them, nobody gives a hill of beans. You go call certain people, I'm not calling names, but they're big shots. Some of them got TV shows. Some of them got extramarital children. But they're going to charge you $35,000 just to come and speak. They didn't do that when they was on the upswing. These things got to stop. We've got to look at us and say, okay. And you ever notice this? Stop and think, and then I'm through. You ever notice that when one of us become too powerful, we give them a TV show? Because we got you in our control. Got you in our control. Thank you. That's all I got to say.
Cheryl, let me just ask you this question along with that. You know, we sit and we watch ourselves not having the kind of strength that we should. And it's just like you said, a light went on in your head. It went on in mine as well, that a part of the problem we're having with our children being murdered in the street is that we complain about the violence that take place, but those of us who've gotten comfortable, we don't leave our seats, our chairs, and shut down the city. If you shut down the city every time an African-American was killed, you know that the mayor would send a message to the police department and telling them, say, listen, you all better stop killing them people unnecessarily, because we can't have this every other week or every other month, our city being shut down for 3 and 4 days at a time. And so, you know, we need more than just those young people in the street. We need these people who have so-called arrived to be willing to get out of their comfortable homes and go in the streets as well.
As I listen to everybody, made some great, great points. And the one thing that kept going on through my mind when I heard everybody speaking is we are committed to nothing. We are not consistent with anything. We start stuff and we stop it. You know, just like, and it's not that we can't give back. You know, when people say, well, I don't have time. Yeah, they have time. Because if they map out their time, the amount of hours that they spend in front of the game systems, in front of the television, in front of whatever electronic product that they have, device that they have, we can find a lot of time. We start one thing, and we have a lot of people that show up. Then all of a sudden, we're not committed, so they don't be committed. You know, it's hard to find people today that's willing to work or willing to work together, just like Pastor Smith said, you know. And because I live in the country, you know, I still see that. When I got from the church boxes and boxes of cucumbers and different vegetables, and I took them, and me and my mama, what we do is we take and load them in a van, and we ride around. We put them in bags, and we start giving them out. When somebody else has something, a man who has turnip greens or whatever he has, or go fishing, he'll stop by the house and give. You know, out here, we can say which I used to could say when we was in New Orleans, nobody would ever go hungry. If you couldn't give them nothing else, you definitely can give them some food.
Mm-hmm.
So it was never not a time that somebody did not have any food. And the same thing with clothes is because we use the ministry, one of the means of having raising money is having yard sales. But our things at our yard sales, somebody can completely dress a person for $2 or $3. And we're talking about some good pants, a nice shirt, a nice skirt, some shoes, maybe $2 or $3. It's just the fact of being, and people donate more stuff to us because they say when you go to Goodwill and you go to these other places, they charge too much. And
right.
We want to be able, for the community to be able to have. And then guess what? If you really don't have, you don't even have to pay nothing. It's given to you. When the flood came and there was, and the schools was closed and a lot of people lost their children uniforms and they did their little shopping and they had their uniforms. And when they got up to check out, your uniforms are free. You know, and I find that just like Pastor Smith was saying, we don't do that no more. But here in the country, I find that, you know, we still do it. We stop by and we give. We help out. You know, somebody can see somebody doing something, and they'll come over. I could recall that our riding lawnmower was broke for a period of time. All of a sudden, we heard the grass being cut, and we're talking about an acre in the back and an acre in the front. And guess what?
Amen.
A neighbor came by and cut the grass and was gone. It wasn't no charge. It was the
praise
fact
God.
I see that your grass need cutting, and I know you're always out there cutting your grass. But the part didn't come in. So, yeah, we have to be committed to each other and consistent and dedicated to each other.
Right.
And we're not even dedicated to our children that's in the household. And that's the reason why our children are falling by the wayside.
Amen.
So my thing again is, no matter what we're doing, we can always do better.
They can always.
All right, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back and let everybody have their final word.
Something that we love to sing. Every time we hear the music and feel this love together, we got the time that lasts forever.
Eastern Time, Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, Sunday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. We're here so that your voice can be heard loud and clear. So call in to 657-383-0309 so that your voice can be heard without interruption. Pastor Smith, what is your final thought for this evening?
Well, James, I'd just like to say that I'm going to try to continue to pray and do my part. And I look at what's going on with the tax bill and all of this nonsense that's going on in Congress. This is nothing new to me. Being a city commissioner for those 6 years and being around the government almost all of my life, I know what they're about, and they're not about you. It's all about what I can put in my pocket. And it's a sad commentary that our people have to live through this foolishness. And this man that's up there now is a total, he's preparing himself. And I don't know whether anybody understands that, but he's preparing himself for when he get out. He don't care about being there 8 years. 4 years would be enough for him because he would have made all these contacts around the world on your dime. Then he can go and do whatever he chooses to do. And these little wusses that we got up there for congressmen and senators, I don't even understand. I couldn't go home and look my wife or my children in the face and say, I'm a man. Money don't make you a man. Money does not make you a man. And I'm very disappointed in what I see now. But one thing I know, and two things for sure, God got this. Amen.
Amen. Cheryl, your final thought for this evening?
Well, this was a very good topic. I really hope that the listeners really get something from this. And I think that with everything that was said, this gave a lot of information that we can take action. And it ought to open up our eyes to see and to examine ourselves to what we are doing and what we are not doing. And what that is, as like I said, as I usually say, whatever we're doing, we can always do better.
Thank you, darling. You're right.
It is indeed time for us to decide what it is that we're going to do to make a difference in our world. It is just chaotic that we have a man in office that is taking advantage of us being asleep at the wheel. And so we really have to wake up, grab the wheel, and use what we need to use in order to take our control back and to gather ourselves beyond the race line, beyond the gender line, and beyond the economic line so that we can get this thing right. Reverend Smith, if we don't get this thing right, we're going to really have to get, you know, we might be at our worst point ever. You know what I'm saying? We, you know, history does repeat itself when you're asleep at the wheel, don't you think?
Right. Yes, it does. Yes, it does, James. I mean, the Bible even tells us that in Ecclesiastes. But I can tell you this, this is all a plan and devised by God. I really believe that with all my heart, soul, mind, and spirit. And I say it each time we talk about something like this. This is a design for us to wake up. Wake up, America. Wake up, people. Wake up, black, white, green, yellow, all of us. We need to wake up. We need to wake up. And when you were talking about Bernie Sanders really did wake up a lot of folk, but they all went back to sleep. That's what I can't understand. That's what I cannot understand. How can you be so energetic about doing something, and then all of a sudden it was like, you're going to sleep again? Suppose people in your life would go to sleep on you about something like that. Because this encourages and this shows all of us and this helps all of us to go into another
phase of our life when we can stick together and do and deal with the situation that God wants us to deal it with. But he's still going to take care of it. And when he does, I don't know how we're going to come out, because we are not doing our share. And like Cheryl, I love that phrase that you use on the end. Cheryl, what is that again? You said, what is that phrase that you use on the end of yours?
Whatever we do, we can always do better.
We can all, thank you. And that is the greatest phrase right there. We can always do better. And that's a phrase that I'm going to take with me, and I've been trying to hold on to that phrase, but that is just a renewal and a confirmation from God. You've got to, we all got to do better. Thank you.
All right. All right, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Thoughts, Love, and Reflection, where your thoughts can be heard loud and clear without interruption. Take care.
Amen. God bless.
Mm-hmm.